Hi, I'm Frank Stronach. I've been blessed with a good mind and good health. It allowed me to start in a garage about 60 years ago, to build a company from a one-man operator to 180,000 employees in 34 different countries. And over 400 factories. When we all hustle a bit to make some monies that we can live in dignity and help the family a bit. I would have a chance to live in 34 different countries with dignities, countries where I operate factories. I chose Canada. Canada is a great country, but I am very worried. I see some signs which are economically no good for Canada, and the future for Canadian cats doesn't look that great. What do I mean by that? Just for practical discussions, about 50 years ago, when the first computers came on the market, the slogan was, if you got one of those computers, you could eliminate a total office floor. When I look around now in North America, Canada, the United States got the same problem. When I look around in those cities, there's 20 times more office buildings in those cities. What do they do in there? They don't make products in there. What they do in there, it's regulations, 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 regulations. There's hundreds of thousands of regulators working in there. They're sucking out the profits, the monies, which workers will be entitled to. So as time goes on, the divide between the very rich and the Canadian workers get bigger and bigger. So, it's the regulators. Furthermore, when we look back about 50 years ago, Wall Street and Bay Street was pushing business. You got to make more profits. On the other hand, the unions were pushing the business. We need higher wages. So what did business do? Business took the easy way out. Business went to China. And when you go to large department stores in the United States or Canada, you don't see any products made anymore in the United States or Canada. It's all imported. So my concern is the debt of both countries are rising like crazy. The bureaucracy is rising like crazy. And the imports are rising like crazy. If there's a new building on that, it's not a factory, it's a warehouse. Factories are converted in the warehouse. So those are all signs that the future doesn't look great. So I have a great concern. We must do something about it. I love Canada. And really now my time goes in. What do we have to do to reverse that? What do we have to do? There's a future for a younger generation. I think it's extremely important that we create an economic charter of rights. What does that mean? Let's talk about the economy for a second, right? An economic charter of rights, you know. The economy is the most important part about it. There's one thing now where business people and politicians and most people agree, if the economy doesn't work, nothing else will work. You cannot feed the hungry. You cannot look after the most fragile people, the elderly, the sick, and the handicapped. So it's the economy, the economy, the economy. But we are very neglectful. We do not talk what drives the economy. the economy is driven by three forces: smart managers, hardworking employees, and investors. In essence, the message I want to get across is loud and clear: workers have a moral right to some of the profits to help to generate. So it shouldn't be that difficult. An economic charter of rights, we could eliminate poverty. Poverty, to a great extent, leads to crime, discrimination, hate, etc., etc. So it will be an enormous win for the people of Canada and the United States if an economic charter would be adopted. What is the essence of an economic charter, right? Okay, over the years, I give many lectures from Harvard, right across the United States, right across Canada, right across Europe. You know, when I look back, and I was taught I was a smart guy, a smart person, but I kind of criticized myself because it took me a long time to realize what are the mandates of a university. The mandate of a university is to teach young people how can we have a more civilized society. Or maybe to be more precise about the thing, universities would be the ideal places because they have auditoriums, they can invite many successful business people or people successful, because in a society everything is important. Healthcare, the art, technology, all those things matter. But it would take people, successful people, to come up what structure do we need which would lead to an ideal society. Isn't it amazing? There's no blueprint. How can we reach an ideal society? What structure do we have? I think the primary reason, because it starts all in school. We do not teach kids. We do not teach people how to be free. If we teach them how to be free, they cannot be manipulated. And the world has always been dominated by the golden rule and still is. The people which have the money or the gold will rule. I, for instance, I don't know if we rule by anyone. If I feel that strong, I should not rule somebody either. So the question really is, how can we dismantle the chains of dominations? Not by violent revolutions, by a revolution of the mind. And that will be an economic charter of rights. Simple basic principles, nothing to do with politics. The number one principle would be countries should not have debt. That means they should have balanced budgets. So my recommendation is in 20 years, Canada and the United States should have no debt. Number two is the bureaucracy is rising like crazy. Let me give you an example. I'm waiting 3 years now to get the permit to put the farmer's market on a piece of land or farm I own. That's incredible how the bureaucracy is climbing. So, but again, I don't want to point fingers whose fault it is. In a civilized society, every citizen got the right to find a job, whatever the openings are. It's the system which doesn't function. But anyway, we got to reduce the bureaucracy. And to reduce it in a civilized way, there would be a hiring freeze for 10 years till we reach about a lower a percentage of bureaucrats which look after society. There was just a recent survey done, and I remember three names. Canada had 100 bureaucrats per 1,000 people. The United States had 70 bureaucrats per 1,000 people. And Japan had 40 bureaucrats per 1,000 people. So we gotta come, we gotta think about it. How can we reduce the bureaucrats, or what I would call the regulators, right? But if there's goodwill, you know, if we put the minds together in the university, we could come up with the right amount, the right ratio. So again, number one is no debt for a country. Number two is to have the right amount of bureaucrat. Number three is very important, our tax system in the United States. In the United States, the tax system about 100 years ago was 28 pages. Now it's about 75,000 pages. When I look at the Canadian tax code, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of paragraphs in there. One is more convoluted than the other, okay? We need a tax system which is black and white, no loopholes. You know, I know we're discussing in Canada now capital gain taxes. Income is income. If you have more income, we should be taxed higher than lower. But let me give you just a simple example. 80,000 is a very low thing here for people in today's environment with inflation rising to such an extent. For 80,000, there should not be any tax issue. And then it would rise a few percent, you know, till we reach about 300,000. You know, 300,000 is not, it's maybe a touch over middle class, right? And then the tax would rise a much stronger thing. Reaching up to 1 million, it would be 50% of the thing would be taxed, but no loopholes, okay? So that's the problem. That's why we have hundreds of thousands of tax specialists which look for loopholes, create new loopholes, etc., etc. It's totally, you know, it's sucking out the profits, some of the profits which should go to the workers. So number three was the taxes have got to be black and white, no loopholes. Number four is we do not want to destroy free enterprise or the capitalistic system. The capitalistic system needs to be harnessed. But I classify small companies below 300 people. 300 people, a company below 300 people could operate completely under the free enterprise system. And, you know, the free enterprise system was quite easily understood about 50, 60 years ago. There was no problem in Canada. The buildings we built, they withstood the snow load, the winds and everything, the sewage system, there was no problems. I remember I could get a permit within 2 weeks or what. The people in the communities were helpful. They say, look, can you change this or that? Then you have a permit right away. So it was great. It's a different Canada now. It does not work, you know, and I'm really worried. You know, that the fridge is going to be half full, right? And I'm worried about mothers thinking now, where does the money come to feed my kids next week? So it's a very serious situation. So, but why small companies? The small companies are the backbone of any society, of any country. So if small business does well, the whole country would do well. The reason why? Because small business will operate one level playing field, all the same. Right now, we have huge amount of different level of playing fields catering to special interest groups, which pay very little taxes. It's totally, totally wrong. So anyway, number four is very important. Number five is when a small company grows above 300 employees, then by law, the company has to share the profits with the employees, okay? No companies are affected now, you know, because it will create havoc, you know? So companies could operate now the way they do, right? But this is a whole new way of operating. So the whole life is an evolutionary process. When I look back to the caveman, they came to hunter and the hunted, they came to kings and the servants, and now we have an environment with the bosses and disgruntled employees. Why was I able to build a company from a garage up to 180,000 employees? I treated my employees like as partners. Every day I went to work, I asked myself, what do I have to do that workers respect me? And we put in a very effective human resource structure where we could flush out all the things which are not right. You know, we had highly trained police officers, which was flushing out. And the whole reason was, when you run a company and the employees are unhappy, unhappiness is contagious. And if you got unhappy employees, there's no way you can make a quality product at a competitive price. So it's absolutely thing that is a framework. For instance, we installed hotlines. When I installed the hotlines to begin with, our manager says, are you spying at us? And now they say it's the best thing is we could flush out if something isn't right. So we want to, so our structure works. Workers can call a hotline. They don't have to give a name, you know, because workers are smart enough. If they have to give their name, it could be traced and they be penalized. So we have a system where workers just cannot be penalized. But we had a highly trained police force, which investigated, because again, the whole purpose was there cannot be discriminations, there cannot be assaults on women, there cannot be theft, there cannot be, it's the most crucial thing is to keep the employees happy, that the employees have to respect the management. So that is important. And number five, as I said, when companies do grow, they got to share the profits with the workers. That's the number five principle in the economic charter of rights. The number six principle in the corporate charter of rights is high school should end at grade 10. Then students should be exposed to trades. This is a win for the students. Why? It gives them extra knowledge. If a student wants to go to university is no problem. It's easy, right? But the great school should be to teach young people knowledge and to be parts of trades. You know, that's knowledge. And the magnet, the trades people make the most money. For instance, I had people here when a manager managed a factory and he wanted to for more money, they said, look, if you're that smart, why don't you replace yourself? Groom a manager, which you step back, you can open up a new factory, you get a cut of the profits from the old factory, you could get a cut in a new factory. I had managers which replaced themselves. They made 10 million a year, okay? And I had managers replace themselves 20 times a year, right? You know, they made up to 20 million. So that let people find their own road, you know, where they, in the final analysis, usually when I give lectures in universities, I tell the students, the success of life can only be measured, the degree of happiness you reach. But I told them, let me tell you from my experience, it's a lot easier to be happy if you got some monies. The smart students would have asked, how can we make some more monies? So I said, look, when you be in your early 20s, you don't know yourself. Experiment a bit. Do something what you enjoy. When you enjoy something and you put in the extra effort, you could be the best, or she, man or woman, could be the best. When you be one of the best, money is always a byproduct. At the same time, I tell the students, but don't you ever forget, you were privileged that you could study. Your parents maybe worked very hard to provide the monies for you. You have a right to the knowledge you accumulate, to use it for your own purposes. But a portion of that knowledge got to flow back to society. That's what the society is all about. Every day we should think ourselves, can we make a contribution to society? Okay, so that's a must. And number seven is one maybe of the most important principles. Number seven is no kid. Might have been the United States or Canada, but I wonder, because I live in Canada, I focus on Canada. No Canadian kid should go to school hungry. That means breakfast got to be served. And no Canadian kid should leave the school hungry. That means lunch has got to be served. And by law, the food would have to be organic. Because we have now 95% of the food, we got to realize, 95% of the food eaten in North America comes from industrial farms. On industrial farms, you see no more eagles fly. Why? There's no more rabbits. There's no more pheasants. We poison everything with pesticides and fungicides. The more I got into the agriculture, the more I could see this chemical jungle. What are we doing to our kids? The amount of chemicals all in, especially the kids, all the kids, you know, I got into it because I was worried. I could see all kids with allergies, stage 2 diabetics. Okay. So thereby, it's very important. Any politician saying we cannot afford that, that's the worst statement you could do, because the medical costs are into the billions, okay? But every Canadian kid should have the right to grow up healthy, okay? Because if you don't grow up healthy, there's no way a kid can be happy. So that is a very important aspect. The Canadian kids should have a chance to, not only the rich ones, also grown up in a low-cost family, in a low-income family, should have the right to grow up happy and healthy. I think I've given me an oversight that nothing to do with politics. This is pure economics. We need that, but also, you know, when I stressed point one, in 20 years, you know, Canada should have no debt. I think if we put in the profit-sharing program, let me point out again, when I put in the profit-sharing program at Magna, the first year, our profits went up 40%. The second year, 100%. The third year, 200%. When you engage employees in a tangible way, they get a portion of the profits. You unleash a force, an energy of outdoor proportions. The workers are on the front line. They know how to make things. That's what we need. That's what the economic chart is all about, to eliminate poverty. And I'm not preaching that we should take away from the rich. We're just saying workers have a right. They should be able to participate when you bake the economic pie, then entitled for a slice. I hope I've given you an insight what I stand for and what we should do. It's high time. I want to have one more very important message I want to get across. The United States has dominated the world for the last 150 years, but the United States is badly slipping, and China is gaining. And the United States is slipping because there's no economic chart of rights there. You know, to a kid in inner city Detroit, the human chart of rights, freedom, doesn't mean anything. He's only free to be hungry. We must have economic choice of rights. But the very message I want to get across is, again, when I said early on, but 50 years ago, when Wall Street and Bay Street was pushing businesses to make more monies, business went to China. We teach China all the technology, all the thing here. And it's very serious. Do we want to live under Chinese philosophies and Russian philosophies? I don't think so, because it's not a democracy. But we have a democracy now, which needs some corrections too, right? Okay, I think I highlighted, you know, what's important, what's the economic challenge all about. So it's main thing, I think we could eliminate poverty, we could get Canada and the United States and hopefully the European thing back, or we start making things. If we can't make things, who can make the better weapons? As a democracy, we try to avoid wars at all times, okay? And we should never trigger the first shot. But we must be prepared. We must have the technologies. We must have things to prevent the war. The best way to prevent the war is to have the best weapons. And we're slipping there. I just want to remind, we should wake up. We're running out of time. Thank you.